The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hey, we are off and running second hour as the football weekend arrives. Sam Pittman joining us during hour number one. We begin the second hour with Joe Tessitore, part of the coverage tomorrow night as Tennessee heads to Auburn. And Joe, it's great to welcome you back to the program. I understand you've been pretty busy today down there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Paul. We had a nice visit with the Auburn coaching staff. We're getting ready for a visit with Coach Pruitt in Tennessee in about 2 hours. And then, of course, we'll be in primetime tomorrow night. What do you got for weekend plans, Feinbaum?
Tomorrow night's saved, as you know. Big game for me, Tennessee-Auburn. Takes me back to my salad days when that was the first SEC game of the year. Tennessee and Auburn always met every single year. So it's a pretty special game. So I'll be kicked back watching you tomorrow night. Nothing else to do.
Well, I think of those who are fans of your alma mater hope that it'll be a special game. After listening to my partner Greg McElroy's analysis, I think he worries about how they will approach the remainder of the season, don't you?
Yes, I do. It just seemed like yesterday that we were talking about them being top 10 team, 8-game winning streak, and a loss tomorrow. I think you know where that puts them. 5 straight losses and a lot of questions.
You know, one of the things I think that's not getting talked about enough, Paul, is, listen, we understand this year is patchwork. This year is all about see what happens, get through it. And we understand that for the players, there's been a lot that's asked of them. But we don't talk about the mental health side of things, of how taxing this is mentally for players. And if you get into a situation like this where you've lost 4 straight, where you've been grinding in quarantine and isolation and testing since early June, and you're in the depths of a season, and there have been postponements, and there's been disappointment, and then you have offensive woes, and where is the hope? You really start to wonder how much more you can ask of the young men, how much more you expect them to give at a certain point. And that's one of the things I'm going to be looking for down the stretch of the season is, which teams are still extending themselves? Which teams are still pushing? And I think where you'll notice it most, if you watch closely tomorrow, not just this game, I'm talking all of college football, is defensively. Defense is all about effort. It's all about hustle. It's all about desire. So watch closely tomorrow and in the coming weeks, what teams look like defensively. How are they really finishing up when not that much is on the line?
Great point, Joe. We had John Calipari on here yesterday, and he gave one of the most impassioned pleas about the mental health of his players and all players and how important the season is. I know you've been there, too. But I'm curious, not only as someone who has dealt with this now for nearly 3 months, but you have a son who plays college football at BC. So you've been able to absorb it, digest it from all sides. What have you learned about that aspect of the game?
But, it was interesting as we were talking to Kevin Steele today, the defensive coordinator down here on the Plains, and he said, listen, and he's been in football for, 4 decades now. And he said he marvels at the young men and their ability to adapt, how much they have to adjust to every single thing. And he brought up the point that football is really a game of routine. It's very militaristic in that. You wake up, you do this on Monday, you do that on Tuesday, you get in your lift, you're on the field at 1 o'clock, you're going about your pregame ritual and this and that. There is no routine this year. There is no routine. Every time the phone rings, you don't know what's coming next. You don't know who's out of action. You don't know if contact tracing is wiping out in a complete unit. You don't know if your game is now canceled. There are situations this week. I mean, what we're dealing with in our family, of all of a sudden yesterday we find out, oh, no, there isn't a game next week for our son playing in the ACC because of the juggling of things in Miami. And then there's talk that there may be some other games now happening next week. For these two teams, you have one team that's coming off a 2-week layoff that they didn't expect. You have another team that's coming off a 3-week layoff. Now, thank goodness for Auburn, at least they've got some momentum. They felt so good about what they were able to show against LSU. But if you're sitting here in Tennessee and you've lost four straight and your team is struggling to convert third downs, you just wonder where things are mentally.
And I want to ask you about Auburn, since that's where you've been today and where you are. This has been a little bit of a difficult team to figure out. They've had some bumps and looked really, really poor at times. But you mentioned the LSU game. I mean, they had the markings of a really well-oiled team. What are you picking up from Kevin Steele and everyone else down there?
Well, I'm picking up a lot of where they feel like they are offensively. And Chad Morris, the offensive coordinator, the play caller for Gus Malzahn, and what they're seeing out of Tank Bigsby, the freshman running back. I mean, they say things about this kid. Now, listen, we've all seen it, right? We've seen what he's been able to do statistically. We've seen his explosiveness, his ability to get to the next level. But they feel like the offensive line is really playing the way they want them to play right now, that they're really playing Auburn football, being able to punch you in the mouth and commit to the run and get things done right now. Keandre Jones is a guy who has stepped up at the right guard in place of the injured Brandon Council. And he has really delivered. And because of that, they feel like they have their identity now. Bigsby's running the ball great. Bo Nix is running the ball well. And then, of course, he was able to hit on some deep balls against LSU. So this is the Auburn team that they expected to show up. And it was much necessary. Obviously, they had the choppy waters, the loss to South Carolina, the two controversial plays that got them a couple of wins. But the team that is hitting the field tomorrow night and remembers what happened in 2018 when Tennessee upset them here, and that was a good Auburn team. This is a team that wants to show they are primed for next week, for the Iron Bowl. And if you get Bo Nix running the ball well, you get an offensive line that feels like they can punch you in the face, and Tank Bigsby, as we have learned through the years, Paul, anything can happen in that rivalry game next week.
You know, Joe, I say this in full disclosure, especially to someone, you know my background, and I also know yours as the creator and executive co-producer of Roll Tide War Eagle, the epic 30 for 30. I did not, don't strike me dead. I didn't even think about or realize the Iron Bowl was next week.
Yeah, and this is, you know, I bring that up because I think that's what you want to look for tomorrow night when you watch this game. Listen, a lot of people think Auburn's going to handle Tennessee tomorrow. Now, Tennessee's still going to come out and try to do their thing. I know Greg had the conversation about Garantano, and do you turn things over to the freshman Bailey? A lot of Vols fans say, let's get some of the younger kids on the field. But I think, listen, it's a team that's going to go out there and attempt to win. We'll see, you know, where things go based on how the game goes if they do get some of the younger kids on the field. But I think the one thing you want to monitor is, does this appear like an Auburn team that is trending in the right direction, that continues the momentum going from what we saw against LSU, and is primed to take on that ultimate challenge next week, especially offensively? That's what you saw against LSU. Does this look like an Auburn team that says, all right, we're going to go out there and just try to score points and get into a shootout next week and roll the dice and see what happens? But the way Bigsby is coming around, the way Bo Nix looked against LSU, and you understand what they have on the perimeter with Schwartz and Williams. I mean, Williams is as tough as a matchup as you're going to find in college football. Who knows? Maybe this is very much a live dog next week against Bama.
Well, anyway, speaking of next week, it is Thanksgiving. I don't know why I thought of this because I've been to your house, Joe, and you know, I know what the CDC said about not going to people's house for Thanksgiving. But when everything gets back to normal, vaccine, et cetera, I want Thanksgiving at your house one time. I know you're probably never there, but the food, the idea of that, the food at the test house has got to be unbelievable.
Nothing would make me happier than for us to spend a holiday together where we can just turn it off, have a great meal, talk life, talk ball. We have so much to catch up with, Paul. There's no doubt about that.
Well, we will do it one of these days, sometime in the near future. Joe, it's always a pleasure to have you on, if for no other reason than just to hear your voice and to get your knowledge. It's a pleasure. Be well. We'll be watching tomorrow night on ESPN. Can't wait.
Always fun to do the SEC in prime time. We look forward to inviting everybody to watch a little Tennessee and Auburn tomorrow night. Paul, have a great weekend. Enjoy your SEC football.
Thank you. Joe Tessitore joining us from Auburn. And we are going to take a break. We are very busy today, as you can imagine, with starting with Sam Pittman, Joe Tess. We had Jordan. We had Coach Kermit Davis. We've had so many other guests. And we are only an hour and 10 minutes into the program. Mike Morgan returns to the program next.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, welcome back. Busy show on tap already. We've had Joe Tessitore. A little bit later on, we will talk to Bill Hancock, the executive director of the college football playoff, and see what they have in store and how they are holding up with all the issues going on with COVID. Speaking of COVID, we were not 100% sure the game we're about to talk about would be played. Missouri having some issues. Obviously, South Carolina losing its coach this week. Mike Morgan on the scene will have the call. Mike, thank you, and welcome back to the program. It's good to have you here. And how has everything, before we get to that game, how have you been? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long. I think the last time you and I saw each other was on set there in Charlotte before the sports world as we know it collapsed in Nashville for the SEC basketball tournament. But I've been doing fine. It's been a different arrangement, as you know, for a lot of these games, calling them, some of them from home, some of them from different sites. But thankfully, I'm in Columbia, South Carolina, and ready to call this one in person. But as you know, it's one of the more unorthodox situations because you got two teams struggling to get 53 players. You got one fan base that's more concerned about who the next coach is going to be than who wins the game. And then you got another team in Missouri that hasn't played a game in 3 weeks. So to say this would be unorthodox would be an understatement.
Yeah, Mike, let me ask you about that number, because there's been a lot of conversation about that. And I think there was a perception out there that if you go below the 53, you can't play. That is not true. Can you explain what that number means?
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I've already had a number of people say, Mike, I'm hearing it's going to be under 53. The game's going to be canceled. That's just incorrect. We spoke with Eli Drinkwitz a couple of days ago about this. The rule is if you go under 53, you can basically sidestep the game, for lack of a better term, because it's not a forfeit. It's just as if the game didn't happen, or you potentially postpone it. And as we know, we're running out of dates on the calendar to do that. But you don't have to not play the game if you're under 53. So Eli Drinkwitz told us in no uncertain terms, if they wind up with, say, 51, they're still playing because they have multiple quarterbacks. They have enough numbers on the O-line and the D-line. And if you meet those three requirements, you can still play the game. And I think both these teams want to play the game for different reasons. So they're both flirting with that number of 53, but it's rather inconsequential, because even if either one of them falls below it or if both of them fall below it, all indications are from the coaching staffs that we spoke to, they're going to play the game.
I'm curious, Mike, on the lines or in the quarterback. I mean, what takes it out of your hands, makes it automatic that you can't play, or is there something that does that?
It seems like the kind of loose number, for example, on the O-line, I believe you have to have 8 guys that can suit up to play on the line, because it's not uncommon, obviously, for an offensive lineman to bust an ankle or have some type of injury or just get overwhelmingly fatigued. The number on the D-line might be closer to 7, depending on whether you play a 3-man front or a 4-man front. But bottom line is you have to have enough to start and a couple of backups, because the feeling is, for example, you can find a good athlete on your team to fill in at wide receiver, and he's not going to get hurt. But if you run out of offensive linemen and you put some 220-pound kid who's never blocked in his life, that's a hazard. That's a problem. So as long as they feel like they've got a couple of backups on each line of scrimmage, then the viewpoint is it's safe enough to go ahead and proceed and play.
And talk about playing, South Carolina, you know, has just had a miserable year. I think that's pretty easy to translate. But, you know, what are you hearing in relation to the absence of Muschamp? How have they adjusted to that? They still have to play a game Saturday.
You know, it's weird, Paul. And as you know, I spent time in this market covering South Carolina. I go back to when they hired Lou Holtz, to when they hired Steve Spurrier. And I think in this particular case, by doing it mid-season, it takes away this big 500-pound gorilla that's in the room and seemingly on every play. The anxiety is all over the place. And there was no mystery that this is where the season was heading. And therefore, by doing it now, it's kind of like a big exhale. It doesn't make your team better. I don't believe all of a sudden you start playing like gangbusters because of a coaching change. And keep in mind, Will Muschamp was not an unpopular coach within the locker room. He was an unpopular coach with a fan base that wants more and expects more. So I think there's a little less tension in the air. There's more of a, hey, we got nothing to lose attitude now. I don't think Mike Bobo has deep feelings that he's going to be around next year. Typically, a new head coach brings in a new staff, and it's all in all likelihood going to be an offensive coach who's going to have his own system in mind. So all these guys right now are just trying to enjoy the time left, make the best of it, and see what 2021 has for everybody on this roster.
Not that it's the most consequential game, but South Carolina has lost a few players. Doesn't exactly help their cause. They weren't playing very well anyway, but how do they figure out a way to win this game, considering how down they are?
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those games, Paul, where if we could hit the reset button, which certainly South Carolina wouldn't mind doing, if we could hit the reset button and go back a couple weeks where each one of these teams were at full strength and feeling however about themselves without the issues of opt-outs and COVID and everything else, and each team was at full strength, to me this would have been about a pick'em game. In Columbia, home game for the Gamecocks, I think they were fairly matched. But now you're talking about a South Carolina defense that has walk-ons all over the place on the field. 3/4 of your starting secondary is out. So I don't know what they're going to do defensively. They've already been giving up 50 burgers left and right, and that was when they were at full strength. To me, if you're Connor Bazelak and that Missouri offense, you're licking your chops. They're not the most lethal offense in the league, but they're good enough against a depleted defense that you feel like they could put up a lot of points. But I feel like South Carolina offensively can also score. I think that Shai Smith is a very good receiver. Kevin Harris is a good young back that's going to be part of their future for sure. And Colin Hill has flashes of being a good SEC quarterback. Not great, but a good SEC quarterback. So I still have a weird feeling this is going to be a close game in spite of all the drama and all the sidebar stories about both these teams right now.
You mentioned a minute ago, Mike, before you go, with the craziness of this year, you've called a few games out of the the press box. I realize the equipment is all good, but how different is that for you, not being able to look down, see the players, feel the not feel the crowd because the crowds are pretty sparse, but I'm really curious the difference between being there, as you will be tomorrow, and being home.
It's a great question. I know on the surface, I mean, we have all this technology now, and, we can certainly do it. So many of us have done games from different studios and from our homes, and we know how to do it, right? We know how to pull it off. By that same measure, it's not nearly the same. It's hard enough for me. I mean, we're going to do a game tomorrow, and there might be 15,000 fans here. And I'm used to doing games at Williams-Brice Stadium when there's 90. I did a game in the Swamp a few weeks ago. Ordinarily, there would be 90. Instead, there was about 15. That's hard enough to get used to that, where the energy is not provided by the crowd, and your voice is not fluctuating to kind of pierce through that crowd noise, which is what we all love as announcers. The crowd is such a big part of what we do and how we sound. So if you take that away and then you're not even there, it's just another level where if you and I are having a conversation, let's say in person, we're making eye contact with one another. That's one of the reasons why we don't step all over each other. You don't have that when you're in one's place and your analyst is in another and your sideline reporter is in another. It's just different. Everything feels a tick off. Again, you can do it, and we're all professionals, and we're going to do the very best to put the best broadcast together no matter what the circumstances. But we would all tell you, if we're being completely candid about it, it's different, and it's just not quite the same.
Mike Morgan on the call tomorrow night, SEC Network of Mizzou and South Carolina. Mike, thanks for coming on. It was good to reconnect, and we will talk to you again very soon.
I look forward to seeing you next time in person. We'll make that eye contact.
You bet. We'll be there. Hey, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Mike joining us from Columbia. We will take a break. More of your calls. I know we've been busy with guests, with Sam Pittman and Tess and Mike and Kermit Davis, Bill Hancock coming up. Matt Stinchcomb is up next, and we look forward to chatting with him.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
We continue as looking ahead tomorrow, LSU and Arkansas. We've already covered the game with Sam Pittman. Now Matt Stinchcomb joining us, part of the broadcast team for that. Matt, welcome back to the program. And let's start there. What a weird game in terms of juxtaposing what happened last year versus this year. How different these two teams are. A lot of people think Arkansas can win this game.
Yeah, when you looked at it, it looks like they're pretty evenly matched based on what we've seen so far this season. Now, the question will be, as we learned, and it was kind of tenuous up until a couple of hours ago, whether or not we knew for a fact that this game was even going to happen. What do these two teams look like on the field of play? Because we know that the coaches are somewhat obtuse as far as informing us who's available and who isn't. But the expectation is that Arkansas, of course, won't have their full complement of players. It would have been interesting to see this game if both teams were at full strength. Excited to see it regardless, because when you think, as you just kind of alluded to, year over year, a 42-point dog last year in that Arkansas game versus LSU. And they ended up getting beaten pretty badly, not by that much. And the idea that at the beginning of this week they were even favored for a time were the Razorbacks. That's the difference in season-over-season comparison in the trajectory of the respective programs. A lot of, I think, enthusiasm, a lot of positive vibes around that Arkansas team, especially with the return of their leader in Sam Pittman and the way that they've been able to play this season so far in their three victories.
Matt, Coach Pittman was with us a couple hours ago, and he said one of the things that he feels like he's done the most correctly was putting a good staff together, which is always tough for a first-year coach. But as you look at Arkansas, and I know you have many times, what do you see in terms of last year versus this year? Different coach, different quarterback, a lot of different players as well.
Outlook, effort. I mean, these guys are playing incredibly hard. They're playing as if they have not only a direction, but a hope to actually come out victorious. You know, I think that eventually, you know, they say winning breeds winning, success breeds success. You know, in a lot of ways, so does defeat, unfortunately. And I felt like a season ago, when we saw Arkansas, I think four times, and it was a program that was in a tailspin, and it was really, really difficult and proved impossible for them to pull out of that tailspin. And I felt like they were kind of trapped in that. And so change isn't always good for the sake of change. But I think in this instance, you bring in a Sam Pittman, a guy that probably what most qualified him for this job was that he really wanted it. This was a job that he desperately wanted to get. In fact, it's, I think, been widely reported now that when athletic director Hunter Yurecek, he didn't even discuss compensation before Sam Pittman said, I'll take it. I want this job. Give it to me. Didn't even talk about how much money he was going to be making, buyouts and the like. On a week like this, that's somewhat of a novel approach. A guy that says, look, this is my last stop. I want this job. Those players, I think, recognize that. And then you mentioned the staff that he's put together. I think it's been outstanding. And that Barry Odom hire, Kendall Briles as his offensive coordinator, has proven to be a fantastic hire. And the fact that they had the injection of Felipe Franks, let's be real. Stability at the quarterback position is a big part of why Arkansas has been as competitive and successful as they've been so far.
You flip that around, and obviously Ed Ogeron had to do more hiring than almost anyone in the SEC that had been established, having to replace his D coordinator and, you know, his passing game coordinator and Joe Brady. I mean, we don't have enough time to talk about how different LSU is this year, but I'm particularly interested in just from the staff personnel and what you see this year and your level of concern about where this program is and trying to finish strong.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. There's no doubt. I mean, they haven't lost back-to-back games since 2015 when they lost, I think, to Alabama, Arkansas, and then Ole Miss. So Arkansas was kind of the catalyst for a bit of a losing streak. They haven't had that. Haven't had it since 15. Haven't had it under Ed Ogeron. That might be likely at this point, depending on whether or not they're able to pull out a victory tomorrow. But when you look at the young players that LSU's playing right now, the true freshmen that are contributing and contributing in substantive ways, it's not like they're just out there out of desperation. Guys that can play, the Ricks kid can play. You know, the Finley kid had a pretty good outing, and then he faces an Auburn team and takes several steps back. Eric Gilbert is a star in the making, if he's not even recognized as that already at tight end. The guy, that workload that they've put on him and his ability not only to grow as a blocker in the run game, but improve his route running, a legitimate receiving threat behind Terrace Marshall. There's a ton of talent that's at LSU to build towards. But when you hemorrhage the way that they did a season ago, record-setting though it was, 15-0, first time in SEC history, all of those things, 16 guys go to the next level, 14 of them drafted, 5 of them in the first round. You can't just plug and play from a personnel standpoint and then, as you're pointing out, add on to that a revamped coaching staff where now you have to pivot somewhat. The passing game coordinator now in Scott Linehan. Joe Brady's now calling plays, and masterfully so, for the Carolina Panthers. Defensively, I don't know that you could have done a more 180-degree turn from Dave Aranda in his countenance with Bo Pelini as a defensive coordinator. A distant departure, not only personnel-wise, but just from an approach standpoint, philosophically. So this LSU football team, other than the fact that it says LSU on their jerseys and Ed Ogeron is on the sidelines, it's basically a brand new football team, and it's almost impossible to compare them to the 2019 version.
And let me close with the defensive side of the ball, because, you know, fans are fans, and they have not really embraced this Bo Pelini hire. But what do you see when you watch a Bo Pelini called defense this year, or have you seen?
Yeah, we've seen some of it. Obviously, in preparation for this game, you know, they're aggressive in that secondary, right? They're going to play a lot of press coverage, and they're going to challenge receivers at the line of scrimmage quite a bit. About half the time, they're going to be in man coverage, it seems like. They've struggled in that early on, albeit, you know, and most notably versus Mississippi State, which seems like years ago at this point. No Derek Stingley on the field in that ball game, of course. He's back. He's one of the better players in the conference, still is. Eli Ricks, another one of the better players, even as a true freshman at corner. They both have length. They're good players. It's the run game, the run defense, rather. It's a little bit questionable, I think. Obviously, the pass coverage has not been up to par from what we saw a season ago. I think part of that's a function of some of the opt-outs and the opt-out gymnastics that they had to go through along their defensive front. They're not quite as physical, in my opinion, at linebacker, and they don't fit the run as well as they did a season ago. And you have to wonder how much of that was due to the transition that they underwent philosophically with Bo Pelini. I mean, let's be real, Paul. This whole season has been somewhat anomalous defensively, not just specific to LSU, but across the conference, where offenses are far and away dominating the defensive sides of the football. And then you couple the fact that you got a lot of new faces playing on that defense and a new coordinator. It's somewhat unsurprising, at least at this point. It would have been shocking coming into the season to see LSU performing the way they are defensively.
Always good to have Matt on the program on these Friday afternoons. Matt, we'll be watching tomorrow, and we will talk to you again next week. Thank you very much. We're heading to a break. Busy, busy afternoon. So many guests, so much to do. Bill Hancock coming up a little bit later, the executive director of the College Football Playoff Committee. The committee is about to start meeting. They're going to meet in person. And Hancock has defended that against some withering criticism, saying, well, coaches and players are going getting on planes as well. But we're actually getting results from those games. We're not getting really anything of consequence from this committee. I think you can tell where we're headed in a few minutes with Bill Hancock of the CFP.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
We are back and back finally to the calls. I know it's been a while. Bryce is in Charleston, and you are next up. Hey, Bryce.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you for the call.
Excellent. So, obviously, none of us want to see anybody get fired, but Muschamp got $13
million? Minimum. He may have gotten more.
Yeah. What do you think about Hugh Freeze or Harbaugh, maybe?
I don't think either one will be candidates. Or serious candidates.
How hot is the seat under Harbaugh?
Pretty hot. I think everyone in Michigan is hoping they don't have to fire him, that he'll find another job.
I was going to say, 13 yards against IU. Good Lord.
Yeah, no, he's he is no longer a candidate for Coach of the Year, I can assure you that. Hey, thanks for the call. Lawrence is up next in New York. Hey, Lawrence.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Lawrence, we're doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of thoughts, Paul. Your first guest today was talking about Bama, and you asked him to identify a weakness.
Right.
And he speculated that if they perhaps turned the ball over and went on and on, and I think it's ridiculous, Paul. I think the weakness with Bama is clear, and it's their defense.
Yeah, I was surprised by that answer. I was convinced that he was going to say something about that, and he didn't.
Yes. It's hard for me to hear you, Paul. I can barely hear you. But I thought that the answer was absurd. I think their defense is porous. I think the Gators are going to absolutely shred them. And I'm going to say something that's probably going to seem a little bit ridiculous, but I think the best team in the SEC at this point is Texas A&M, followed by Florida and then Alabama. Florida's receivers, frankly, are the equal of Alabama's receivers, if perhaps not a little bit better. And their defense is coming around. So I think you're going to see a changing of the guard, and it's sort of long overdue. But I look forward to it, and go Gators.
Hey, thank you. Interesting take, to say the least. Let me check in with Terry, who is in Tampa. Terry, good afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Paul, how are you?
I am really doing well. Thank you.
You know, you're less than 2 hours into your show, and my head is spinning from all your great guests.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I got a little rant about the cancel culture. You know, Joe Tessitore, is a great announcer. Mm. He's got that voice. You mentioned his voice. You miss his voice. And he's got that voice. And Booger McFarland is a great announcer. And they were given, what, 2 years on Monday Night Football? Everybody thinks, you know, there's
and I haven't really talked about that much, but the problem with Monday Night Football, it wasn't either one of the people you mentioned. It was the first person that was in the booth with them who was so bad and so unwatchable that he really brought both of them down. And by the time, you know, Booger and Joe did the Monday Night Football last year, I think the die was cast. I'm speaking of Jason Witten, who should have never been put in that booth.
Yeah, you're right about that. And there's a reason why Peyton Manning and Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit, they don't want to go to Monday Night Football because the cancel culture right now, you know, the minority, the greatest thing that ever happened to us was social media. And the worst thing that ever happened to us was social media.
No, I agree, Terry, and I don't want to act like I don't pay attention to it. I think you have to, but you cannot let it dominate you. And I think too many people in our industry react only to that. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. Somebody will say something, it's no big deal, nobody really cares, and then it's on social media, and then the reaction is profound. And it's important what people have to say, but you cannot. The thing about social media, it will, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, it will go away very quickly.
Yeah, people have, they move on to the next.
Yeah, I've always, our guest the other day, Tim Brando, told me, I react to everything that's said because I don't do a talk show like you do. I've never reacted to anything because I just, it's not personal. But, you know, fortunately, I have this opportunity to deal with folks every day. And while sometimes I would like to react, I think it's just it's a basic policy. Let people say what they want. That's their right. But you don't have to respond to every criticism and compliment on social media.
Well, you're the closest thing to untouchable. Your sponsors, when you look at your sponsors, people realize your show is, you know, Regions. I'm a Regions customer, and Regions is huge. And all the other, you know, sponsors you have, there's a reason why you have all these sponsors. I hear the sponsors while I'm waiting online, while I'm watching your show, if I'm in my car. I hear all these different sponsors, so congratulations. You're one of those guys.
Yeah, Terry, let me say this. I appreciate that very much, but it's the product on this network, both on radio and ESPN radio and on the television on the SEC network that really attracts those quality sponsors. They want to be associated with the SEC. I'm not saying that, you know, we don't do a good job here. We do. We have a great team, but I don't want to take any of that credit. We are heading to a break. Bill Hancock will come up next. Our first conversation with him in a while. The head of the CFP will join us next.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.